sick and tired of people who say that if you debate and you disagree with this administration, somehow you're not patriotic. And we should stand up and say, we are Americans and we have a right to debate and disagree with any administration.
Hey, everybody, this is Maggie Rodden, and you're listening to The Unsolicited Opinion. How you doing today? I'll tell you, as I say always, it's a great life if you don't weaken, but you know what? It is difficult not to weaken sometimes, but we can't. Take heart, listeners. We cannot weaken. We have to have steely resolve, granite resolve not to weaken, but to become stronger. So, you know, I want to mention the shows that I had on this past Thursday and Friday, because for all of you who are listening, my show is now heard 6 days a week. I am on, of course, Sundays at noon, which you're listening to right now. And I am also on Monday through Friday on Republic Broadcasting Network from 11 a.m. Eastern to 1 p.m. Eastern time. So I'm on 2 hours a day, Monday through Friday, plus on Sundays here via micro1650am.com, Orion Talk Radio Network. And, you know, I have a lot of great guests that I bring on. And of course, Sundays I've been focusing on the Constitution with my friend here, Bill Ryle. But during the week, I've had some people on, and this last Thursday and Friday, I had some people on who have been victims of code enforcement. And what is happening is really, right now, you can call it rural cleansing taking place throughout this country, but it isn't really just rural, though some of the guests I had on were talking about they lived out in a rural area of California, and they were being cleansed off the land. And so for those of you who understand what ethnic cleansing is, well, this is really no different in a sense that, well, they're not killing people literally. They are removing them from their property. And as George Washington said, freedom and liberty and property rights go hand in hand. You cannot have one without the other. And the powers that be recognize that. That's why they are systematically denying people the right to own their property, and they are removing them off of their property. And it is critical that you recognize that it may not be you today, but it'll be you tomorrow. It's only a matter of time. And history tells us this. It goes on and on and on. It repeats and repeats and repeats, and human beings are too stupid to pay attention. And I don't know, I'd like to take a baseball bat sometimes to get people to wake up, but they don't. And, you know, there's nothing you can do about that other than try. But I really would like all of you listening to check out the podcast from Thursday and Friday, because you have to hear for yourself how these code enforcement Nazis are removing people from their land. I had a fellow on my show on Friday who was looking at doing 7 years in prison because he didn't have a permit for a building on his land. 7 years in prison. So these are some critical times. These are some frightening times that we are living here in the United States. And on Sundays, I have my friend, and he's a constitutional scholar, and William Taylor Ryle has been studying the Constitution for 21 years, and so he really knows it inside and out. And so that's why, you know, Bill's been on with me now for a few weeks, but I think it's critical that we keep going here with the Constitution, and so people understand what the foundational principle of this country is, what the laws of this country are, and so that they know what they have and what's being done to what they have, so that they can fight back. Education is ammunition, as far as I'm concerned. So I want to welcome you, Bill. We've got, a few minutes, I guess, before we go to the break. So how you doing today, Bill?
I'm good, Maggie. It's good to be on the show again. Thank you so much.
Oh, you're welcome. Glad to have you, Bill. Let me just give out the call-in number for anybody who may want to call in. 716-213-6816 is the number. 716-213-6816. Also, my website, three words, theunsolicitedopinion.com, theunsolicitedopinion.com. Please go there. I've got a lot of information, links to all of my guest websites. I still got to get a tab up there. I promise I'll do it this week, Bill. I promise. A tab for Bill so that the documents he sends me will also be up on my website, because you need to see the information that he has accumulated. It's important. But my website, theunsolicitedopinion.com, please go there. And I got a great store I put up on there. So listen, if you want a T-shirt that says you help redistribute the truth, go to my website and buy one, please. It'll support the cause of freedom. So I don't know where we left off last week, Bill, because I honestly didn't go back and check. And I figured I'd leave that up to you. So where are we going today, Bill?
Well, as I recall, we were talking about trial by jury, and or the lack thereof. At any rate, in the framing of the Constitution, both the state and federal constitutions talk about trial by jury. It's a very important part of maintaining the republic, in that the people have all the power, and that ultimately the power finds itself exercised in one way or another, but particularly in the juries, when the state makes a charge against a citizen, it's supposed to be put to a couple of juries. Actually, if it's a crime, it's a jury composed of 25 people, which is a grand jury, that determines whether, in fact, the state has probable cause to proceed, and then ultimately to a jury of 12, which determines both the law and the facts of the case and whether that individual is guilty of the crime charged. Now, those functions of the jury, as we talked about last time, have been drastically changed.
Bill, I hate to interrupt you, but are you sure we went into trial by jury last week? You obviously know, but I didn't think we got there. I know we were talking about, you know, how we got to the Constitution and that stuff historically from the Pilgrims onward, but did we get to trial by jury?
Well, we talked briefly about nullification.
Okay.
And starting in that the same power that the state has from the people to nullify a federal law or alleged law is the same power that the jury has. And that's
okay.
How we got to talking about the jury.
All right.
And that the juries have the total authority of the people. And that was settled in a case in 1794. It's State of Georgia versus Brilford. And there, Justice John Jay said that though he'd like for the jury to accept the law, it was the duty and responsibility of the jury to judge both the law and the facts. And that has been contested by those in the judiciary ever since, actually, if not before, because the attorneys and judges really want to have a lot of power, and today they virtually do, and they have done that through usurpation.
Let me interrupt you one second. So this is where the judge comes in and he tells the jury. This is where the judge's and jury instructions come in to play, and is this where a lot of the I guess usurpation is maybe a word to use. I'm not sure if it's the correct one in this particular instance. Is this where the judges end up not basing their instructions on the Constitution and the rule of law, but base it on other crap instead? Is this where this interference comes into play in this instance?
Judges play today a role that was never conceived by the framers.
Okay.
The judges now instruct juries that they can only determine the facts of the case. And in determining the facts, the judge plays a great role as to what will be admitted, what will not, what conversations go on, what testimony is given. They really do manipulate the case far more than they're supposed to. They're supposed to be an impartial referee, if you will, of the parties to make sure that rights aren't violated. It was always the intent, and judges were supposed to be cautious and very protective of everyone's rights. Now it's the procedure and to make sure the state wins. Now, maybe that's a bit prejudiced, but that's been my experience. And what you end up having is a jury sitting there being fed information, not always all of it, and then very controlled. And only allowed to say whether this fact sounds to them to be true or not. While that's an important function, it is not really the primary function. The primary function of the jury is to determine the entire case. And that includes to determine whether the law that they're being prosecuted under is a fair and just law. It's a constitutional. If it's...
Bill?
Hang on.
Can you hear that music? Yep, that's our cue. And Ashley is playing louder today, so that's good. says, now I can actually hear it. So, hey, everybody, this is the Unsolicited Opinion. My name is Maggie, and we'll be back in a couple minutes, so hang in there.
Throughout history, the power to issue money has been used to enslave man into a perpetual system of debt. Power of the Purse Volume 1 is a 4-hour and 50-minute documentary film that dissects the true history of the people who have controlled the monetary systems of the world. It exposes how bankers have historically engineered artificial economic booms and busts to consolidate wealth and power. It exposes the role of powerful banking interests funding both sides of major wars. From the Knights Templar to the corrupt central banking powers of today, this documentary provides an in-depth chronological look at the influence these powerful financial institutions have had on this world. The many illusions of the modern-day monetary system and how it has been used to turn people into slaves is fully revealed. Purchase your 2-DVD disc copy today at PowerOfThePurseMovie.com. Again, that's PowerOfThePurseMovie.com.
This July 4th, come join patriots from all across the great land in eastern Pennsylvania for Freedom Palooza, a 3-day festival of music and great speakers. Come party with the likes of former Congressman Jim Trafficant, Man, They Railroaded That Guy, Mark and Rose, K.I. Sullivan, Freedom of Fascism. You want great rock? We got it. How about the most influential, hardest working band in the movement today? Poker Face. We got the Ameros, Burn the Ball Out, Ab Killer, Doug Hawk, Front to Enemy, Grunts, Kinetic Blue, Payday Monsanto, Secret System Band, Scrap Metal Bomb, Rebel Inc. Man, that's a lot of bands. Camp out under the stars along the Delaware River like our founding fathers did before the Battle of Trenton. What else are you gonna do on this 4th of July? Sit around with family members you hate? Listen to your fat uncle tell the same stories he tells every other year? No way, man. I'm going to Freedom Palooza. Go to freedompalooza.com for all the details. Freedompalooza.com.
Timothy Spearman's The History of the Peace Train. The peace train Cat Stevens made so famous rides the rails once more. Tim and peace poet Vivi Pruitt are riding the rails, jointly promoting their new books. Vivi's inspirational peace poetry, Princess of Peace, complements Tim's historical History of the Peace Train. The History of the Peace Train details the history of trains since the dawn of train travel and the instrumental role they have played in the peace movement internationally. Check out Timothy Spearman's website at www.shakespeare.com. Books are available for Tim and Vivi at xoxopublishing.com and amazon.com. Catch Vivi and Tim's live radio show, Writing on the Wall, on the Orion Talk Radio Network. Saturdays, 5 to 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Don't miss out on a history-changing event.
Hey, everybody, this is Maggie, and you're listening to The Unsolicited Opinion. And I want to mention, listen, Orion Talk Radio is a great new website. You got to check it out. It is OrionTalkRadio.com. Jules and her husband, and I don't know his name, so I can't add that. But Jules and her husband, Jules, who's going to be on the next show on Jimmy X, Jules and her husband have been working on it. So it really looks sharp. It's OrionTalkRadio.com. And Orion has a Facebook page, too. So for all of you kiddies who are on Facebook, go and check out Orion's Facebook page as well. And you know what? I don't have the exact link info for Orion's Facebook page, but OrionTalkRadio.com. Check it out. It looks very, very sharp. So I always admire people who have talent when it comes to all this technological stuff, because it just ain't my stick. I'm the pencil and eraser kind of skill set here. But anyway, so take a look, OrionTalkRadio.com. If you want to call into the show this morning, 716-213-6816, 716-213-6816. If you would like to contact me, my website is three words, theunsolicitedopinion.com. TheUnsolicitedOpinion.com. Listen, I've got some great t-shirts and stuff up on my website. I have a little store, T-shirts and More store. So, hey, check it out. And maybe there's something you'd like. And I'm in the process of adding some more witty, as I like to think of them, witty little sayings and stuff to add on T-shirts so we can get the truth out there, because the truth needs to be redistributed, or redistributed, rather. And that's why Bill Ryle is on the show with me this morning, so that he can talk about the Constitution. And so when we went to break, Bill, you were talking about the jury and the judge, so giving them not all the information he needs to be giving them, or not applying it correctly. So please continue from there, Bill, please.
Yeah, so it was clearly recognized when the Constitution was written that the jury was very important to maintaining our freedoms. And the courts have strived from the very beginning to get more and more power. So in the Brailford case in 1794, Justice John Jay, who, of course, was around when the Constitution was written, clearly stated that it was the duty of the jury to judge both law and the facts, and the duty of the courts to instruct them as such. And then in 1895, there was a case, Spraff, S-P-R-A-F, excuse me, S-P-A-R-F, you know, that's it, versus U.S. And in that case, they changed that position and said that, well, the judge didn't really have to tell the jury that they had this right to judge the law. And so they decided at that time to mislead juries intently. And it's gotten worse ever since.
When was this, Bill? I'm interrupting. When was this that they decided it was a good idea to mislead juries? When did this begin?
1895, the United States Supreme Court in Spraff versus U.S., S-P-A-R-F. If people want to look it up, it's 156 U.S. 51, 1895 is the citation.
Okay.
And so they have been misleading juries ever since, and it's gotten intently, in fact, worse. Now, virtually no law is discussed with the jury other than what the judge instructs them. And as it puts the power to, frankly, pervert the case in the hands of the judge. And that's not the way it was supposed to be. So the reason I bring that up is that authority, that the people have all the power, rests in the jury. And while the jury may decide that someone is not guilty, even though that individual has done what the law prohibits, because the jury determines that it's an unjust law, unconstitutional law, they don't repeal the law. They simply say that the individual who's charged is not guilty and that, therefore, he will not be held to its requirements. And when you start thinking about state nullification, that's the same authority that the people give to the state, both in their governor and in the representatives, and frankly to the courts, to say to the federal government, if they have committed an unconstitutional law, enacted something allegedly, that is contrary to the federal constitution, for which they have no authority, then the states can say, we will not participate, we will not try to enforce this alleged law. And as I'm sure everyone is aware, that if something is done unconstitutionally, that action is null and void from the time that it's done. And no action is necessary to make that statement, either by the courts or anybody else, other than saying it's not a law and we will not follow it. And that can be done at any level, actually, being responsible for your actions. Because if you're wrong, and in fact it is a law, then you would, in fact, be prosecuted. But if the government has done something that's unlawful, is unconstitutional, then it's not a law at all. People often say, well, you'll have chaos. You know, there'll be no, everybody will be determining what the law is themselves. And that's true. That's exactly what our responsibility is to determine what is the law and instruct those in government at all levels that what they're doing is not lawful and that they need to change their actions. And oftentimes those in government don't do that, maybe because they don't understand what the law is, or they say, well, that's the court's job. And that's just not true. It is everybody in government's job, before they act, frankly, to determine what they're going to do is or is not constitutional, and not do something that's not constitutional because they have no authority to do it. So this idea of nullification, first jury nullification, which is often called by the jury saying that someone is not guilty, and then state nullification for the state saying to the federal government that what you have done is blatantly unconstitutional and the states will not enforce it. Now, I think it's interesting for everybody to remember that the primary job of the executive branch, let's say the president or the governor of the state, is to see that the laws are faithfully executed. Now, if something is done that's unconstitutional, it's not a law. So it's really the job of the president to not sign something that the Congress has passed that's unconstitutional, or for the governor to do the same if the state does it. And oftentimes they don't. They say, well, the courts will solve that problem, which it's not right, because we the people have to suffer under these unconstitutional acts until maybe the judiciary will in fact reverse it. And they don't often do it, but that's the last ditch. And then comes the final check, and that's in the juries. So it would be nice if those in the legislative branch would do their job and understand and follow the constitutions and not do things that are unconstitutional, and then for the president or the governor to veto it if it's not constitutional, but they don't. And so what we're now faced with is many acts on the part of the federal government that are blatantly unconstitutional. And I guess the one that comes to mind first is Obamacare. And it is clearly unconstitutional. The federal government has no authority whatsoever to even talk about health care, much less act on it. And why do I say that? It's because the enumerated powers for the federal government are found in Article 1, Section 8, and there are 17 expressed powers, and then the final one, which is the enforcement or enactment clause, which says that the Congress has the power by necessary and proper legislation to implement the foregoing authority.
Bill,
or power.
Hold on, that okay. Music, that is the cue. We are going to break, and Jimmy actually turned the cue music up for me so we can now hear it. It's a wonderful thing. This is the Unsolicited Opinion, everybody, and we'll be right back in about 3 minutes, so hang in there.
Free speech guaranteed. You're listening to the Orion Talk Radio Network. The Orion Talk Radio Network is here. The First Amendment of the Constitution grants us freedom of speech. That's the freedom to express our views and opinions without censorship. If you listen to mainstream radio at all, you'll notice that free speech is pretty hard to find these days, with just a handful of networks offering programs that dare to discuss topics and issues that have a profound impact on our daily lives. The mainstream media simply lies by omission and distortion of the facts. The Orion Talk Radio Network is committed to bringing you entertaining and thought-provoking programming that dares to tell the truth. And you can help us as we grow our network. If you think you have what it takes to host a show, you know of someone interested in hosting a show, or any other suggestions, comments, or questions, please drop us an email at OrionTalkRadio@gmail.com. That's OrionTalkRadio@gmail.com. And thank you for listening to the Orion Talk Radio Network.
IRN USA Radio News, I'm John Russell. The appeals trial of American student Amanda Knox, who was convicted of murdering her fellow exchange student, resumes Monday. With more, here's correspondent Nicole Winfield.
On Monday, we expect to hear from another man convicted in that slaying, Rudy Herman Gede. He was called to try to counter testimony by a fellow inmate who had said that he had claimed that he had information clearing Knox and Solicito of the murder.
Two people who survived a fiery Russian plane crash have died in a Moscow hospital, bringing the death toll to 47. The Tu-134 plane slammed into a highway just minutes before landing at the Petrozavodsk Airport in Russia's northwest on June 20th. Eight people initially survived the crash, dragged from the burning aircraft by people on the ground, but a 9-year-old boy died a day later. You're listening to IRN USA Radio News.
If you are over the age of 30 and are serious about losing 1 to 2 pounds a day, please stay tuned to this important announcement. A local market trial is starting now for an incredible weight loss breakthrough called HCG Extreme, and you may be eligible to receive a free 30-day supply. We are looking for 200 people to receive this risk-free trial. HCG Extreme is not a fad, gimmick, or diet craze. There's no doctor's prescription needed. It simply helps reduce cravings, therefore you eat less. HCG is considered one of the fastest and most effective ways to lose weight and keep it off. And best of all, with the HCG Extreme convenient drops, you don't wait weeks to see results. It happens daily. HCG Extreme is now being released to the public in key markets. The first 200 callers are guaranteed participation in the trial.
To find out how to get your bottle of HCG Extreme risk-free, call now. 1-800-605-1672. That's 800-605-1672. Free bottles for a limited time. So call 800-605-1672. That's 800-605-1672.
Radio X.
Your host, Jimmy X.
Sunday afternoons, 1 to 3 Eastern, here on the Orion Talk Radio Network.
Hey, this is Maggie Rodden, and you're listening to The Unsolicited Opinion, and the call-in number 716-213-6816, 716-213-6816 is the number. My website, three words, theunsolicitedopinion.com, theunsolicitedopinion.com, and of course I want to mention again that Orion Talk Radio, he has a new website, so check it out, oriontalkradio.com, and it was Jules and her husband, Paul. Jimmy had emailed me. It was her husband, whose name is Paul, who put it together. So listen, kids, if you're into websites and you like that kind of stuff, check out what they've done with OrionTalkRadio.com. And I want to mention that for those of you who may not be aware, I'm also carried on Republic Broadcasting Network now Monday through Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Monday through Friday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And I have got some great guests lined up this week. Tomorrow I've got Doreen Hannis on with me, who calls herself the Truth Farmer. She actually has a blog called truthfarmer.blogspot or wordpress.com. Links are on my website under podcasts. And I also have... I'm trying to reach here to read it. On Tuesday, I have Dr. Ileana Johnson Powell, who knows all about communism, having lived under it. And on Wednesday, I have a gentleman on. His name is Chris Sullins, and he wrote a book, and he sent a copy of it to me. It's a trilogy, and he sent me the second book, and I haven't completed it yet. But the first book is entitled Operation Surf, and this man, he's got a military background, and he is a very sharp cookie. His website is Garden Surf. com. And he's a smart guy, and he's a real tactician. And I think if you're interested in reading a very well thought out book, very interesting read, a fictional book, check out his book, Operation Surf. But he'll be joining me on the 29th at 11 a.m. Eastern time. So listen, kids, listen Monday through Friday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern on Republic Broadcasting Network. And, of course, I'm here today, and I'll still be here every Sunday henceforth until they don't want me anymore. Then I'll have to go out in the garden and eat worms, Bill. That's what I'm going to have to do. My mother used to tell me that when I was a kid. You know, I'm telling you, you wonder sometimes the bizarre stuff your parents say to you. No, nobody loves me. Everybody hates me. I'm going out in the garden and eat worms, small and skinny ones and short and fat ones or something like that. I don't know if that was I don't know if that was a nursery rhyme or what. Did you ever hear that, Bill, when you were young? That little ditty?
I heard that. It wasn't a nursery rhyme. I don't know. I think it was just something that the kids said. I don't know exactly where it came from.
Yeah, I don't know either. But anyway, back to, I got a question for you here, Bill, as you're talking about jury nullification. So is this where, when I've seen different people going and protesting or handing out information in front of, like, for example, down here in Philadelphia, the federal courthouse and that stuff, they've been handing out information on juries or jury nullification and that stuff, I get, and they get all irate down there. Is this what they were handing out of stuff related to what, so the jury knows what their true role is?
Yeah. Right. There is an organization, Fully Informed Jury, and the intent is to inform the people who are on the jury that they do, in fact, have the responsibility and the duty and the right to judge the law and the facts. And, of course, this upsets the people who are in the judiciary, primarily judges and attorneys, because they then are shown not to be telling the truth. And the jury retains its power that was always intended by the framers. It takes it away from the judge and the attorney, the prosecuting attorney. And they don't like that, obviously. And so people who protest by handing out this information, which is all true, well, I can't say it's all true, but the information I've seen from the fully informed jury is true.
What you've seen is true. You haven't, obviously.
Right.
Seen everything. Obviously.
Seen everything, right. But the bottom line is those in power would rather you didn't know that. And so when the people are informed and then they begin to judge the law, that upsets the judge and the attorney who's trying to prosecute somebody, primarily contrary to the real law, and that's
yeah.
the reason they get upset.
Well, you know, that makes me think of this fellow that I had on Friday who's looking at 7 years in prison for not having a permit for a building that was on his land, and he was telling me that they had the jury remain there for, I don't know, 6 days or something like that. He said, you know, they kept... you know, saying to the jury, I don't know exactly how it went, but however it went, it sounded, it was obviously he got a raw deal. You know what I mean? So maybe if somebody had been there to actually give instructions to the jury that they didn't have to follow, I don't know, unjust laws, I guess, you know, he wouldn't be looking, obviously he wouldn't be looking at 7 years in prison. It's just outrageous, outrageous. But
it is outrageous, and it's because our entire government has gone away from the framing documents, and that's the bigger problem. Well, particularly the judiciary, the judges and attorneys and professors of law have been driving this for many, many years. But I think what we have to do is return to the original intent of the documents, and that's what's so important about having discussions like this.
I agree.
So the federal government has limited powers. It was always intended to be the agent of the states. We talked about this a little bit last week, that the people of the 13 original colonies, the colonies and then states, formed in between 1776 and 1781, all the states filed their constitutions and became states. And so those 13 states came together to ratify the Constitution that came out of Philadelphia in 1787 and form the current government of the United States of America, at least the way it's supposed to be according to the Constitution. And those ratifying conventions, which was the requirement of the document in order to ratify it, nine of the states had to ratify it. New Hampshire ratified on June 21st, 1788, and it became law and went into force on March the 4th, 1789. And all of those states sent in amendments that they would not ratify it unless there was a Bill of Rights. And Washington guaranteed there would be a Bill of Rights. That was the first action of the first Congress. And they went out to ratify in 1789, and they were ratified, the last 10 out of the 12 that went out, on December 15th, 1791. And the Ninth Amendment, which was put in there really to counter Hamilton's argument, and it says the enumeration in the Constitution of certain rights shall not be construed to deny or disparage others retained by the people. Because Hamilton said, well, if we list certain rights in the Constitution, then it'll be interpreted that's all the rights that are. And, of course, that was the reason of the Ninth Amendment. It's interesting to remember that the Constitution was written in order to solve current and perceived future problems. And
right.
So to look at the original intent in order to figure out why things were done. The 10th Amendment was written in order to say, wait a minute, there are certain powers to the federal government, certain to the states, and the rest of the people. And it says the powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution, nor prohibited by it to the states, are reserved to the states respectively or to the people. Now, those two amendments are extremely important, the 9th and 10th, with respect to we the people being the sovereigns in this country, unique on the earth, and that we delegate certain powers to those in government to act on our behalf, and we don't give them up. We simply say, instead of us doing all this, we want you to do certain things at the county level and at the state level and at the federal level, and you have specific powers. If they overlap, which sometimes they do, then the federal government on powers that are specifically delegated, if it conflicts with the state, then the federal government is the superior law. Then the state, if it has something that's unique and separate, then it's the supreme law of the land. And then, of course, the people still retain all the authority. Well, nullification is a function that is not a new concept for the state to exercise. In fact, it first was presented by Jefferson and Madison in 1798, when they were, in fact, objecting to the federal government enacting actually four Alien and Sedition Acts. The alien portion was to say that they could deport aliens without any trial, just kick them out. And the sedition portion was that you couldn't speak against government, particularly the president and the Congress. And so it's interesting. Adams was the president.
Bill.
And the Congress was president. Yes. Mm-hmm.
The music is the cue.
Okay. I didn't hear
okay.
it.
Okay. That's okay. That's okay. We're going to break. So hang in there, everybody. This is the Unsolicited Opinion. Bill Ryle is my guest again today, and we will be back in about 2 or 3 minutes. So hang in there.
Of the 3 million plus edible food plants that grow on Earth, no other single plant can compare with the nutritional value of the powder, seeds, and oil of the hemp plant. At hempusa.org, we ship worldwide these nutritional products with free shipping to the U.S. and Canada. At hempusa.org, we want to educate our listeners that edible hemp is not marijuana and is certified THC-free. Our powder is 50% protein and does not contain gluten. Gluten impairs the cells from absorbing nutrients. This nutrient-dense food can be stored up to 5 years when vacuum-packed and is priced affordably to be used as a storable food. HempUSA.org is a bulk shipper starting with 5 pounds and up. To allow this food to work for you, call 908-691-2608 or go to HempUSA.org and order today. The body will react and heal itself given the proper nutrition. This superfood will be your greatest asset. So try it today, store it today, and change your life. Call 908-691-2608 or order from hempusa.org.
Imagine no longer being tied down to your computer, but having the freedom to take live talk radio with you anywhere you go. TalkStream Live introduces our first ever iPhone application. The talk shows you follow now follow you, and your iPhone is now the fastest and easiest way to stay connected to the best talk radio on the internet. Let TalkStream Live transform the way you listen to radio. Listen to live talk shows 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Mobile talk radio from TalkStream Live. Now available in the iTunes App Store.
Now you can listen to the Orion Talk Radio Network on your phone, anywhere, anytime, with our Listen by Phone feature. Just call 704-772-7627. 704-772-7627. Then enter the code 10016. That's 10016. All long distance and cell phone charges apply. Powered by UpSnap.
Lee Rogers here. The global controllers are continuing their quest
to enslave humanity and form their new world order. The one thing standing in their way are free thinkers who reject collectivism and support individual liberty. In these troubled times, it is imperative that we the people are not destroyed for a lack of knowledge, but are instead empowered with information. RogueGovernment.com and BlacklistedNews.com are two of the best sources of alternative news and information on the internet. Whether it's geopolitics, globalism, government corruption, the unraveling global economy, staged elections, false flag terrorism, the technological control grid, martial law, the police state, or our issues of real significance, you'll find them on these websites. RogueGovernment.com and BlacklistedNews.com feature raw, fully sourced information with no intrusive advertisements. Be sure to visit these sites and empower yourself with the news and information the corporate control mockingbirds don't want you to know about.
Bob Seger bringing us back to another segment of The Unsolicited Opinion. My guest this morning is William Taylor Ryle. He is a constitutional expert. He's been studying the Constitution for 21 years. And boy, Bill, wouldn't it be nice for you and I and everybody else in this country if the attorneys and judges and our elected politicians and all of these people would study the Constitution as well, including our law enforcement officers and the FBI and the members of the Department of Homeland Security and, let's see, how about the Department of Education and the teachers and all of these people who are unaware of the tenets of the Constitution. Wouldn't it be nice for all of us if they familiarized themselves with the Constitution so that the kids in school wouldn't be indoctrinated and they would be told the truth and that we wouldn't be rewriting things and saying that the Constitution was this fluid document that was really outdated and old and, oh, you know, it's like an old beat up old shoe and, you know, it doesn't matter anymore. It's a sneaker with holes in it. Get rid of it. We got to come up with something new because we're 21st century thinkers, right? Wouldn't it be nice, Bill, if all of those people would make sure that they honored their oath that they take to support and defend the Constitution as opposed to following individuals?
Well, like you said, it's nice. Well, not only be nice, it's their absolute solemn constitutional duty to do so.
Yeah, I know.
And every one of them in violation of their oath of office by not doing it. And it's a crime. It's absolutely multiple crimes. And the problem is, since the attorneys and judges are the ones implementing most of this, and I don't think that's an overstatement, there's certainly a lot of other people participating, don't get me wrong, but the only way this can actually happen is for attorneys and judges to do it, because if they followed the Constitution, you know, it'll be solved in the courts. The point being is, we have very serious problems, and those problems arise out of the fact that the Constitution's both state first and then the federal where applicable, are not being followed. And it was recognized in the beginning. These problems that we're experiencing today are well documented by the framers. They understood and talked about these kind of problems, and they were working very hard to provide documents that would, in fact, prevent what is happening today from happening. And it's because those documents get in the way of those who would want to control us, control everything for that matter, they are ignored. It's sort of like the Bible's often ignored because it gets in the way of people wanting to do wrong. But at any rate, this founding father, James Madison, who obviously was very instrumental, he put together the consolidated complaints as an example for the Bill of Rights that came from all the states. He was, in fact, the one who kept notes for the convention. Very much involved, often talked about as being the father of the Constitution. Talked about this concept of nullification in Federalist Paper 51. And he was the author of the nullification document, a resolution in 1798 in Virginia. And Thomas Jefferson wrote the Kentucky Resolution in 1798 that said, hey, we want to preserve the Union. We're not saying we're not. But what the Union has done in these Alien and Sedition Act is just absolutely unconstitutional. And Virginia and Kentucky are not going to participate. We're not going to enforce them. And if anybody is charged with this crime, they will not be prosecuted in Virginia or in Kentucky. And they sent these resolutions out to the different states, wanting to get all the states to go along and say the same thing to the federal government. Some of the southern states did, the northern states did not, and many of the northern states were federalists, and so they were in favor of what the Federalist Congress had said. As I said, it was interesting that the vice president was fair game for these seditious acts. The president and the Congress were not. Well, who was the president? Adams was the president, John Adams. The Congress was federalist. And the vice president was Thomas Jefferson, because at that time, the president and the vice president were elected by the first one getting the majority of votes, and the one getting the second number of votes was the vice president. And often, they were of different parties. So,
when did they change that system, Bill?
That was, I think, the 12th Amendment.
All right.
Early on, they recognized, and actually it was because of these problems that it got changed. But the bottom line is this: Alien and Sedition Acts led to tremendous conflict. And the resolutions went forward. There were complaints from the other states. And in 1800, Madison wrote an extensive report for Virginia, the General Assembly, explaining in great depth and detail as to why this was the proper thing to do, to interpose the states, to interpose between the citizens and the federal government to stop these unconstitutional acts. Jefferson coined the phrase the rightful remedy. And there was a lot of activity. Eventually, the Alien Sedition Acts were repealed in order to actually avoid war. And so we had a process that worked. Well, it's interesting that these northern states, though they complained vehemently about it in the late 1700s, when these resolutions became the Principles of 98, what they were called, they objected to those. But within 10 years, the northern states were suffering from federal usurpation, and they began to try to get things nullified. And so it's interesting how politics works. The principles are often shed aside for personal greed and control, but until you're oxygen gored, and then you want to use the same principles. I find that going on a lot. But
yeah,
here we have this concept of nullification, which is born in the Federalist Papers, evident that the states are the principles to the compact that formed the central government, and they have the authority to keep the central government in check. And there was the original fact that senators were, in fact, appointed by the legislature of the states, remember?
Yes.
And the 17th Amendment made it a director election, which stripped the states of their authority to check in the Senate. And that was the original concept.
And
the House of Representatives.
That would have worked to, if they hadn't come up with a 17th Amendment, that would have worked to keep some of this crookedness at bay if the senators were actually elected by the representatives of the state instead of a general or popular vote type thing, wouldn't
right.
it? It would have put the blocks to that whole crooked thing.
Well, that was the wisdom of the form of government, that the people were representative, the emotional part was in the House, and the more settled long-term six-year time period for the Senate, which were representing the states, and the states could say to their senators, you need to not do that, and if you don't, we're going to recall you, right, and bring you back. And that was the checks. There are supposed to be multiple checks and balances which have been destroyed over time. To now we have what they call the democracy, not a republic anymore. So what you have then is this effort by Madison and Jefferson to do away with this horrendous series of Alien and Sedition Acts, which ultimately worked, and the acts were repealed. Well, later on, the federal government began to impose taxes on the states, exorbitant taxes in the late 1820s and 1830s. And so nullification was brought up again by South Carolina, was the first state to move forward on it and say that they would not impose these taxes and that they were ready to go to war. In fact, they passed a resolution to go to war, to get ready for war. Jackson prepared to go to war. And finally, the taxes were reduced. But Madison changed his tune. Even though he had talked about in the Federalist Papers that this was the proper thing to do and that he had obviously written extensively in the early, late 1700s and early 1800s, by 1832, he had changed his position. Now,
Bill,
many people say,
Bill,
yes.
Listen, we've only got about another minute, so we're going to have to end it on that note. And make a note to yourself, of course, which you do, that we'll take up where we left off today next Sunday. Okay, Bill, I hate to do it to you, but it just is what it is. The fat lady singing, Bill, and we're at the top of the hour.
Time flies when you're having fun. So we
will continue
next week. That'd be
great. Yes, definitely. So any more stuff you have to send me to put up on my website, I promise I'm going to do it today, Bill. You're on my list of things to do. Thanks for coming on. I always appreciate it. Everybody,
thank you very much.
Oh, you're welcome, Bill. William Taylor Ryle, self-taught constitutional scholar, and he truly is. And, you know, Sundays is my day for the Constitution because I think it's so critical that everybody really gets a good understanding of what it is that is the foundational document of this country. Listen, everybody, I love to go to Oz. Somewhere over the rainbow is a wonderful place to be. Keep your chin up. Better days are coming. We've got people like William Taylor Ryle in the world fighting for you and me. Listen, I'll be back tomorrow at 11 a.m. Eastern Time on Republic Broadcasting Network. So join me there. Got another great guest lined up. Take care, everybody.
Oh.